Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, continuing our reading from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 17, entitled Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu. Today we're doing text number 36. Sri Shuku Vacha Iti Shutva Bhagavata Shivasyo Ma Bibhashitam Abhuva Shantadi Rajan Devi Vegata Vismaya Shishuku Vacha Iti Shutva Bhagavata Shivasyo Ma Bibhashitam Abhuva Shantadi Rajan Devi Vigata Vismaya Shishuku Vacha Iti Shutva Bhagavata Shivasyo Ma Bibhashitam Abhuva Shantadi Rajan Devi Vigata Vismaya Shishuku Vacha. Shishuka De Goswami said, Iti. Thus. Shrutva. Hearing. Bhagavata. Of the most powerful demigod. Shivasya. Of Lord Shiva. Uma. Parvati. Bibhashitam. Instruction. Babhuva. Became. Shantadihi. Very peaceful. Rajan. O King Parikshit. Devi. The goddess. Vigata Vismaya. Released from astonishment. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, after hearing this speech by her husband, the demigoddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva, gave up her astonishment at the behavior of King Chitraketu and became steady in intelligence. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur remarks that the word Shantadihi means Suya Purva Swabhava Smritya. When Parvati remembered her former behavior in cursing Chitraketu, she became very much ashamed and covered her face with the skirt of her sari, admitting that she was wrong in cursing Chitraketu. Almagyanatimarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitangena tasmai shri kudave namaha namang vishnu padaya krishna prasai buddhale shimate paladananda swanitone namang vishnu padaya krishna prasai buddhale shimate bhaktivedanta swanitone namaste saraswati deve gauravani vicharani nirvishesha shuni vati paschati ate chicharani. So this is one reason why it's always recommended that we engage in Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. You know, constant hearing and chanting about the glories of Krishna and his devotees. Because in every single page, every single verse of the Bhagavatam, of these different shastras, we get so much, you know, such a treasure house of information, practical information on what it means to be a devotee, on what it means to engage in Krishna consciousness. Like with this verse, even though it's very short and the purport is even shorter, well, just about as short, but still there's so much wonderful instruction here. Like in this comment that Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gave, just talking about this, these two words from the actual verse itself, Shantadihi, which means very peaceful. So he's giving further understanding that, well, why does it mean very peaceful? He's saying it means very peaceful because Sviya Purva Sabhava Smritya. So Suya means one's own. Purva means previous. Swabhava means one's own nature. And smritya, of course, means remembrance. So in other words, it means remembrance of one's own previous nature, or how one was previously acting. And so Prabhupada gives he gives that translation of it, but with even more understanding than what Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gave. Mentioning how when Mother Parvati, remembering her former activities, she became very much ashamed and covered her face with the skirt of her sari. So this is actually a very wonderful quality, because this is showing the nature of a devotee. The nature of a devotee is to be humble. You know, a devotee may, you know, in the course of their activities, they may make very, you know, strong statements, like Mother Parvati made here. Cursing someone is a very strong statement. You know, it's saying something. And it's not to be taken lightly, especially when it comes from Mother Parvati. But yet, even though she took such a stand, calling Chitraketu an offender, but yet as soon as she became aware of her misconduct, her improper behavior, she actually became very ashamed, you know, showing all humility. So it's, and she did this because she's a devotee, and devotees have natural humility. Where in the material world, when somebody gets challenged in their activities, they don't just, you know, humbly submit to the truth that yes, they acted improperly. No, they defend their, you know, irregular activities. They defend all these different activities, trying to justify them, saying, oh, well, you know, I did this because of this, and I did this, and just look at that person over there, they're doing the same thing also. You know, either trying to pass the buck, or trying to deny that they actually did those activities, or in so many different ways, arguing with the fact that they committed a mistake. Because this is the nature of the false ego. The false ego never wants to admit that it's wrong. But devotees, even though we may still be influenced by these modes of material nature, we still may become, you know, caught up in what's happening around us, and because we're in this human form of life, we're bound to make mistakes, simply because we're still encased in these prison clothes. But yet, because the nature of a devotee is to be humble, as soon as the devotee realizes that they're in the wrong, they just drop all pretenses. Whatever pretenses they may or may not have been aware of, they just drop it all and say, yes, Prabhu, actually you're right. You know, I'm sorry. They take the humble position. They don't argue. They don't get in your face and try to say, oh, well, you know, you just don't understand. Or they just say, you know, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. You know, please forgive me. So that's why Mother Parvati here, she was hiding her face with her sorry because she was so ashamed of her activities, of what she had done, for cursing such a greatly exalted soul. And Chitraketu also is exhibiting his great humility, realizing that, well, you know, he may have been a little bit out of place saying something to Lord Shiva, even though he was saying it with the ultimate benefit of the general populace in mind. It was mentioned that he said these things just so people wouldn't misunderstand what the standard of conduct is. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever actions a great man performs, all the world follows. So Chitraketu understood this, and when he saw Lord Shiva sitting with his wife on his lap in an assembly of saintly people, he realized that this is irregular conduct for an average person. So he felt he had to say something, just so if the average person does observe what's happening, they won't misunderstand, and they'll realize what the standard behavior is for an average person. So even though he engaged in this activity for a greater good, but still, you know, it's somewhat of a bold stance to take, you know, chastising your own mother and father, even though he's not directly the son of Shiva and Parvati, but still, Shiva and Parvati are the mother and father of all living entities within this universe. It's by their creative potency that all of us were generated. That's why Parvati is known as the mother of the universe. And so when Parvati cursed Chitraketu, he took it as being that, well, this is what my mother wants for me. So because this is what she wants, I'll gladly accept it. And he's exhibiting his humility, realizing that, yes, I did take a rather bold action, making a rather bold statement. And if this is how Mother Parvati wants to reciprocate with that, then I'll gladly accept it, because I deserve it. You know, he doesn't try to counter curse or try to negate the curse, even though it's explained that he had the power. He had the power to actually negate the curse of Mother Parvati. But yet he didn't. Because of this wonderful quality of humility. So, as aspiring devotees, it's important to understand our situation here in this material world. Here in this material world, we're encased, we're trapped in these bodies made of these three modes of material nature. And due to this entrapment, we're going to be influenced in different ways. So, in order to take a proper course of action, we need to develop a broader vision. And we do this by, you know, our daily activities in devotional service, namely sadhana. Sadhana means daily activities. So we do that by rising early in the morning, which helps put us in proper intelligence. It primes our intelligence to be able to understand what will truly be able to help us, namely the shastras. Reading and studying the shastras and chanting the holy names. So by studying the shastras, Krishna explains in the Gita that by studying this Bhagavad Gita, this is in serving me with your intelligence. You know, so it's a form of service, and it's specifically with our intelligence, so it greatly purifies our intelligence. So with a purified intelligence, we can understand, you know, where we're situated. So with that in mind, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in verse 245, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrayi Gunyo Bhavarjuna Nirdvandvo Nitya Sattvasto Niryoga Yoga Kshema Atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subjects of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. You know, so we need to get freed from all the dualities of this material world that are generated from these three modes of material nature. So generally, everyone here in this material world is hankering after everything that these modes can offer, namely fame, wealth, followers, strength, you know, so many different things. And any time that our prospect of attaining these gets challenged, we put up a fight. Because we view this as what's really needs to be strived after, what the real goal of life is. Yes, to become a master in the material world, to have this material energy bow down to my influence. Because it's explained that the jivatma, is part of the putta prakriti, part of the superior nature. Where the material energy is part of the apara prakriti, or part of the inferior nature. So even though the apara prakriti is vastly superior in terms of quantity, it's still inferior. So even though we, as a minute, infinitesimal spirit soul, even though we're so insignificant in comparison to this material energy, still we can control it to a limited degree, because we're of a superior nature to it. But this is the very trick. People who are desirous of exerting their own power and authority, they're seduced into trying to manipulate this material energy. And as soon as they try to manipulate it, to control it and dominate it and force it to do what they want it to do, immediately they become overwhelmed by it. Because it's too powerful. It's like trying to catch a really big fish, and instead you get pulled into the water instead of the other way around. Because everyone has these grandiose dreams of how wonderful it can be if they can control just like Krishna. That's like trying to catch a giant Timangila fish. But you're this tiny little insignificant being in like a rowboat. So trying to pull a Timangila out of the water, you're just going to get dragged down. There's no way you're going to be able to pull that thing out. So that's what happens. We get completely submerged in this material energy. Just like when Markandeya Rishi, he was a very exalted, saintly person, sitting on a bank of a holy river, performing very nice penances and austerities. And he actually pleased Narayan so much that Narayan actually came to his hermitage. And he said, "My dear Rishi, I'm very pleased with your austerities and penances, so please ask of me some benediction." So Markandeya Rishi, he was still a little bit unintelligent. And so what did he ask for? He asked to see how Krishna's material energy works, how it operates. And so Markandeya Rishi just gave this wry smile, feeling, Narayan Rishi, I'm sorry, gave this wry smile, feeling a little bit, sorry for Markandeya Rishi, knowing what he would experience, but at the same time, he granted his request. And so as soon as Narayan left that hermitage, immediately the whole universe began filling with water. First blazing fire and then water, because it was an actual annihilation of the whole universe. The whole universe got inundated and destroyed because it was the end of the Kalpa. It was the end of Lord Brahma's day. So Markandeya Rishi, he was not destroyed with this annihilation. And he was floating around in these waters of devastation for, how long is it? For 4 billion years? 4,320,000,000 years? That's how long Lord Brahma's night is. That's how long his day is also. It's 1,000 Divya Yugas. One Divya Yuga is the combination of Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Kali Yuga. And that's 4,320,000 years times 1,000. And that's how long the universe was in a state of annihilation, completely submerged in water. So we've all seen how if you fill a bathtub with water, waves naturally occur in the bathtub just because of the motion of the water. And so you get these tiny little waves. So you magnify that bathtub to a larger bathtub, namely like the ocean. And what do you get? You get swells so large that even the largest of the ships don't go there, even though they're like 3-4 football fields long, these ships. They're humongous ships. And they don't go there because these swells in the ocean are so gigantic that it'll just break the ship in half. We're talking swells of over 100 feet. And so now amplify that bathtub to be a lot larger, namely the breadth of the entire universe. And so you can just imagine how large those waves are. those waves in that ocean, the Garbhodak Ocean, are so humongous that they're probably millions of feet tall. And here Markandeya Rishi is, this insignificant little entity, stuck there in those gigantic waves, getting tossed and turned in those waves, getting swallowed and spit out by Tim and Gillifish. The Tim and Gillifish don't even know he's there. He's just getting sucked in through their nostril and then spit out through their mouth. It's explained that Tim and Gillifish is so large that the Tim and Gillifish can swallow a blue whale as if it's no bigger than just like a little guppy, just a little tiny, insignificant little fish. That's how large a Tim and Gillifish is. And there's all kinds of Tim and Gillifish and other sea monsters in this ocean. And Markandeya Rishi is just getting completely battered and bewildered. So much so that he doesn't even know which way is up, which way is down, what's water, what's air. And the whole universe is completely dark. There's no sun. So he can't see anything. He doesn't know where the land is, where the water is, where the air is, which way's up, which way's down. And he's being battered by these gigantic sea monsters. And he was actually a very exalted sadhu, having genuine knowledge, genuine realization about the self. And being here in this situation was so bewildering that he completely forgot all of it. He couldn't remember what the real self was. He couldn't remember what the goal of life was. Anything, because he was completely battered and bewildered by the material energy. But then, you know, because whatever spiritual advancement is made, it's never lost. So Krishna was just doing this to show him how bewildering this material energy is, even if you are on such an exalted stage of self-realization. But then Krishna decided to wind up this show at the end of the night of Lord Brahma. And so then Markandeya Rishi saw this island. And on this island was this gigantic banyan tree. And this island is actually Purushottam Kshetra. It's a transcendental land. It's where Jagannath Puri is. The eternal pastimes of Lord Jagannath always happen there. And on that tree was this little baby, a little blue boy that was sucking his toe with great relish. And the previous acharyas comment that this little blue boy was actually Krishna. And he was sucking his toe because he was curious. He was wondering why all these saintly people, all his devotees, always hanker so much after his lotus feet. And he was wondering what nectar it contains. So he was sucking on his toe just to taste what nectar was there. And so Markandeya Rishi, he sees this little boy, and the little boy is looking straight at him. And then the little boy, Krishna, he inhales. And Markandeya Rishi gets sucked in through his nostrils. And then immediately, he's back in his hermitage. Everything's exactly how it used to be. There's the river there, his little hut. He's sitting in the same sitting position. And he's thinking, whoa, what just happened? And then the next moment, the little blue boy exhales again and he's back in the waters of devastation. And then gradually all the water recedes and then he does go back to his hermitage. And he continues in his meditations on austerities. And he was so exalted, actually, that Lord Shiva comes by. And Lord Shiva understood this is a very exalted sadhu. But he didn't get up when Lord Shiva came. And so once again, if my memory serves me right, I think it was Mother Parvati was with him. Or maybe it was some other saintly people. But they were disturbed and they were going to curse Markandeya Rishi because he didn't get up when Lord Shiva came to his ashram. But Lord Shiva said, no, no, no. he's actually in samadhi, so he doesn't even know I'm here. So Lord Shiva went into his mind and appeared before him in his samadhi in this magnificent tin-headed form. And it shocked Markandeya Rishi out of his meditation. And so Markandeya Rishi offered his obeisances and all these things. And so this is just to illustrate to us how powerful this material energy is. And as aspiring devotees, we need to be humble and we need to realize that, yes, you know, we're still struggling with this material body. Prabhupada said, as long as we have this material body, the concomitant desires that come with this body will always be there. We don't have to be disturbed by these desires, but we should know that they will always be there. So that's why we need to develop this quality of humility and submissiveness. Being submissive is inherent with humility. This quality of submissiveness is actually so important that Prabhupada said in the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada said that Krishna's existence can be realized by one who has the single qualification. In other words, only one qualification is necessary. What is that one qualification? That single qualification of submissiveness. And who thereby becomes a surrendered soul. So Mother Parvati is exhibiting this quality of submissiveness. Even though she acted inappropriately, even though she cursed King Chitraketu, still, as soon as she realized her fault, immediately she was submissive and humble and covered her shirt with her skari out of embarrassment and being ashamed at her activities. So if we can all really just focus on this and just meditate, you know, what am I doing? Am I acting simply out from under the influence of these three modes of material nature? Are my actions, are my words, are my thoughts motivated by these modes of nature and trying to control and dominate this material energy? And just be honest with yourself. Because these things, these subtle aspects of Krishna consciousness, they're internal things. They're things that happen within our heart. And nobody's going to be able to see what's going on in your heart. I mean, granted, if what's going on in your heart is so polluted that your physical activities are manifesting in a polluted way, then of course, people are going to see that. But at the same time, when you're dealing with these more subtle things in your heart, only you and Krishna are going to be able to see that. So that's why to make real advancement in Krishna consciousness, it requires genuine honesty. Genuine honesty means honesty with yourself. Because it's the easiest thing in the world to lie to ourselves. Because of the false ego, we all want to falsely think that we're some great personality. Whether a great material personality or a great spiritual personality. That's the nature of the false ego. So the false ego can lie to us. We can lie to ourselves and say, oh, you know, I'm such a spiritual person, you know. I know how Krishna consciousness should really be executed. I really know how everything should go on. And then you criticize everyone else. Oh, just see, you know, they're doing this and they're doing that and they're letting this happen and they're letting that happen. But this is lying. This is just flat out lies. What's really happening is that your false ego is out of control. Because the quality of a devotee is to see, you know, take the humble position and see how can I serve? How can I be an instrument for this greater mission? And so a devotee sees how he or she can constructively contribute to what's going on, rather than just taking pot shots and criticizing, oh, you know, this thing, that, oh, did you hear what happened? Oh, you know, did you see that person? That's not the quality of a devotee. Rather, a devotee takes the humble position, takes the submissive position. Yes, with their intelligence, they may be able to realize different things that are happening. But out of their humility, they think, how can I be a servant? How can I be an instrument? How can I be helpful in cultivating and developing things and pushing on this mission of the previous acharyas? So I think I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Bhrigupati Prabhu? I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand. I'll get you next. You need to turn the mic on and take the mute off.
There we go. How the materialists, they're like the person. They're going to catch a big fish, and they get pulled in to the into the water. But actually, Prabhupada told us, and Surya Prabhu can confirm that. Swaspa said, you, in one letter, he said, you have to learn how to catch the big fish without getting wet. Mm-hmm. So how do you reconcile this apparent contradiction?
It's not a contradiction at all. It's just that it's a matter of what... Can you turn the mic off? It's just a matter of what boat you're in when you're catching the big fish. So the materialists, they're in a little rowboat. A little tiny thing. You know, barely even long enough for them to lay down in. And so it's very unstable. It's not a solid foundation upon which you catch big fish. To catch big fish, you need a big boat. You know, you need a boat at least big enough to hold the fish. And so in that big boat, you'll be very stable. And if you're properly situated in that boat, with, for instance, having other people there to hold on to you, to keep you in the boat, then you'll be able to catch those big fish. So this big boat is the society that we have, that Prabhupada established, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And this big boat is also the instruction of the spiritual master, the instruction of these shastras. And those other people there to hold you down into the boat, those are the sadhus, those are the saintly people who by their association will keep you in the proper behavior so you won't get sucked into the material pool. Because as devotees, in this mission of the previous acharyas, it's a preaching mission. We're Goshtyanandis. We're not there just to practice our own bhajan and let the whole world go to hell. We're out there to go down to the darkest, most degraded places, go everywhere, for the upliftment of all conditioned souls in the material universe. That's what the mood is. We're followers in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj said, all those people they can go back to the spiritual world, but myself, I'm concerned about these poor fools, these conditioned souls that are suffering here in this material world. So I want to be where they are, in the middle of the cities, where they are, and help them out of this ignorance they're in. So, following in the mood of our previous acharyas, we have to be there. We have to be trying to catch those big fish. But at the same time, we do have to be properly situated. Otherwise, we'll get sucked in just like a materialist. If we don't have the association of these saintly people, of the devotees, you'll become a materialist just like everyone else. And it's happened so many times. People, they go off by their own, on their own. Like also, like for instance, at one point, Mother Jamuna, she went to go live away from the temple. But Prabhupada told her, live with one other devotee. Don't live by yourself. And so she did. And she was able to maintain her Krishna consciousness nicely in the association of devotees. So that's one thing we always have to remember. Association of devotees is the most valuable asset. Association of devotees will save us from re-entering this material pool. And Krishna goes so far as to say in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that by association alone, you can go back to Godhead. That's how powerful it is. Is that okay?
Thank you. Good answer. That's what I call thinking fast on the Vyasa-san. That was good. Thank you.
I think Vishal had a question and then Arjita and then that's it. Because we're getting late.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. So, wonderful class, very very blissful. So, but I wanted to make one comment. I Prabhupada mentioned about, you mentioned false ego. I understand Srila Prabhupada said that my disciples are very intelligent, but I have trouble with their false ego. So I guess the false ego deals with different bodily concepts of like we still have. Bodily, you know, we still don't really fully realize we're not the body and we have bodily conceptions. But I wanted to mention basically about Parvati. Parvati and Lord Shiva are perfectly pure devotees. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. And Prabhupada says, behind every great man is a greater woman. I understand. And also Chitraketu is also a pure devotee. So I'm trying to understand that although there's many lessons in this narration, you know, and she, you know, whenever there's blasphemy or offense against you, you're supposed to tolerate it, you know. But if there's some offense towards someone else, you shouldn't tolerate it. You should be angry. So it appears to me that she had some justification to be disturbed, you know, by Chitraketu's behavior. They're both pure devotees. So I wanted to understand that it seemed like she wasn't completely wrong. And she was submissive towards her Pati Guru, towards Lord Shiva. So she showed virtue, you know, there.
Yeah, you know, she wasn't completely wrong. But, you know, so ultimately the question is, how is it that pure devotees like Chitraketu and Parvati can do things like this that seem to be, from the material point of view, a mistake or overstepping your boundaries? You know, so really, you know, this is just Leela. Because as Archita nicely mentioned in his last class, when you're dealing with pure devotees, you're dealing with perfect beings, perfected souls. And they're simply acting for the pleasure of Krishna. So Krishna wanted this to happen to illustrate a point. You know, but in themselves, they're pure devotees, and so all their activities are perfect. Parvati's cursing Trishaketu was perfect. Even though it was a mistake, it was still perfect. You know, so we just need to remember that when we're listening about, you know, hearing about pure devotees, like these pure souls, that nothing that they do is imperfect. It's just that by Krishna's influence, he's directing them to act in these ways for our enlightenment, for our understanding, to illustrate some, it's didactic. It's to help teach us a lesson. Is that okay? Thank you.
Hi, Bhavan. Very nice class, Omkar Prabhu. It's obvious you can get in trouble trying to catch big fish, but you can also get in trouble trying to catch little fish. I'll give you, there's a video on the internet that's viral. If you've never seen it, maybe you should look it up. It's really informative. This guy was out, I think it was off the coast of New Zealand, in a 14-foot sea kayak. He knows, it's his boat, he knows how long it was. And people were watching from the headlands, and they actually videotaped this. So he's catching little fish and gutting them, you know, and throwing the guts back in the water. And all of a sudden, this huge shark comes, and the shark was at least 6 to 10 feet longer than his boat, which was 14 feet long. So the shark is like 20 feet plus.
Wow.
And for hours, he circles this sea kayak and bumps it. And this guy was like, you know, he's about to die. Literally for hours, like I think it was like 6-8 hours, the shark was just going around his boat. So the point is, when you're trying to catch big fish or little fish, the big shark of death is circling. So that's the motivation, to don't hang out here and, you know, engage in nonsense. Because, you know, you may discuss this and that and argue about this and that, but the big fish of death is circling us all the time, and we don't know when he's going to take a bite. This guy escaped, you know, he lived to tell the tale. But he was scared witless. I mean, it's a very, very powerful video to watch. This big shark was just circling his boat for hours, would not leave him alone, was bumping it, and he thought he was going to die.
Jai, thank you. Grand Trashim of Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.